Hello and welcome to the Fifth Quarter Footy Podcast. This is a podcast of two mates talking all things footy for the 2023 season. We are currently going through our 2023 season previews. We are where we are looking at each team and how we think they'll go for the year. Some key indicators that we're looking at are the ins and outs from 2022. We look at some general predictions for the year ahead, what the clubs should be aiming for, and then we'll take a deep dive into some individual players who may be ready to take the next step, or maybe some players who are a little bit under pressure. Dita, how are you?
Yeah, going very well, Luke. It's exciting for us too. On Monday, we started our Supercoach Keeper League. So we've been following along quite nicely, and it's tracking a little bit slowly at the moment, but it's always fun to get in some new players into the team. How about you?
Yeah, you're right. The Supercoach draft that we're doing, it's definitely getting me excited for the season ahead. Doing these previews have actually made me quite excited for the year ahead, but the draft makes it feel so real, and it feels like it truly is around the corner, which it is. You know, practice games starting soon. By the time this episode's out, there probably has been some practice games already. So, it's exciting times. And we're already up to talking about Port Adelaide and Richmond this episode. So, yeah, we're flying through these.
Yeah, it's been going quite nicely, knocking out a few a day throughout the week. And really excited to hear about Port Adelaide because they're a team with a lot of potential, I think, in 2023. But interested to hear your analysis.
Absolutely. So we'll get straight into it. We'll look at the Port Adelaide Power. Let's look at the ins and outs. Coming into the club, there's one very, very big name, and that's Jason Horne-Francis. Very controversially come over from North Melbourne. Obviously, the number one draft pick of 2021, and he's coming into a Port Adelaide midfield, which I think could benefit greatly from a player of his calibre. Obviously, still very young, still very raw, has a lot to prove in the AFL, but I think we saw enough signs last year to know that he's going to come into this Port Adelaide team and be a really big plus for them. I think he's a walk-up start, assuming he's fit. But outside of him, we also have another, I think, fantastic get for them, and that is Junior Rioli, or Willie Rioli, as some of you may know him as. Junior Rioli's come from West Coast. He's a small forward who's really got some true X-factor quality, suiting to the Rioli surname, which is exciting for Port. A bit of a Stephen Motlop replacement, Robbie Gray replacement. He'll play in that small forward role. Maybe he'll push through the midfield. We'll have to wait and see. Outside of those two, there's no real names of note. They didn't have a first-round draft pick, so we won't discuss the draftees unless you've got any comments to make on them. Dita, what do you think of those ins?
Yeah, always exciting having Rioli on your list. Unfortunately, Bulldogs don't have one, so I don't know what it feels like, but I think the X factor that Rioli has inside 50 is just incredible. And obviously, a Robbie Gray replacement, almost a like for like. And, you know, Rioli can obviously push in through the midfield throughout spurts in quarters, late in quarters, just to help out. And, you know, Jason Horne-Francis, a former number one pick, obviously might have been down on expectations from last year, and Dacos obviously was a very great player in his first year of footy, but I think any player in the top three or five has so much potential, and I don't think we've seen the best of Jason Horne-Francis yet. Very excited to see him in his home state, happy now, I guess, now that he's out of North Melbourne.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, can we say the sky's the limit for him now that he's in a happy place of his? We'll have to wait and see. Looking at the outs, there's three pretty big names, or probably two big names, and then one aging name that really sort of stopped impacting a whole lot towards the end of his career. Firstly, we'll go, though, the player traded out, and I think it was their one of, if not their leading Brownlow medal vote getter from last season, Carl Amon. He's departed, gone to the Hawks, leaving a bit of a hole on that wing. We'll wait to see who takes that role. They've got a few guys who can do it, but that'll be an interesting thing to watch out for come the preseason games and the start of the season. But the two sort of bigger names, I guess, in terms of their careers, Robbie Gray, superstar of the game, superstar of the club. He'll be missed even if he was getting towards the end and slowing down. He was still able to win games, and he's broken my Carlton heart a few times in his day. So as much as it's sad to see such a great player go, I'm also not complaining because he can't do that to us again anymore. And then Stephen Motlop is another one who's departed through retirement. There's a few other names, Martin Frederick, Sam Mays, Taj Schofield and Sam Skinner, who have also departed the club.
Yeah, big absentee with Robbie Gray retiring. He's arguably one of the greatest Port Adelaide players to have worn the jumper. And yeah, Carl Amon as well. Probably a bigger hole to fill than what some people might think. He was an established player on the wing and really had a penetrating kick inside 50. And I was a personal favourite of mine with his skills. I was really impressed with him. And I think Hawthorn have a steal. So it'd be interesting to see which Port Adelaide player takes that new role that's vacant.
When we discuss Port, a lot of the preseason talk has been around the idea that this is a team that is going to jump from outside the eight and be that top four team. Every season there seems to be that one team that does it, and everyone's sort of pinning that team as being Port Adelaide. When you look at their list changes, do you think that they've improved on an overall sort of level, or do you think they've dropped off a little bit?
Very good question. Very hard to sort of match the ins and outs as a like for like. I think Jason Horne-Francis is an upgrade in their midfield, certainly on the ball, whereas they might miss that outside run that Amon provides. And then you could argue that Rioli sort of replaces a Robbie Gray, but you know, Robbie Gray has so much experience, and particularly in those close games, they might be missing. Port Adelaide might be missing that. On the prediction though, hard to see them really kicking down the door and leaping into the top four position or somewhere inside that top four. I think there are some heavily favourite teams that I think might be a bit better than them.
Yeah, I for my prediction, I kind of do agree with you a little bit. I could definitely see them potentially pushing into a fourth if everything goes right. That being said, every other team in that top eight is improving, and I don't know if Port's list has improved as much as the other teams around them. I do think they underachieved last year, and so naturally they will rise up the ladder. And in comparison to the other top eight teams, the teams we think should be top eight, they will have a bit of an easier run. That being said, for a general prediction, I've got them sitting sort of 6th to 10th. I think that's it's a pretty broad range, with the club obviously aiming for probably finishing in the top eight. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Ken Hinckley under a little bit of pressure after a down year, and I think they were 0-7 or something to start 2022. So it's going to be an interesting year to see if their easier fixture helps them bank a few more wins early. But yeah, I think you'll just look at the top eight, and each team has improved, whether from the draft or trade or free agency. Looking at those names that we talked about earlier, it doesn't strike me as a list that will make a top four just on the off season alone. So I think they really need to bank on players established at the club to really help move them forward, and not just your Jason Horne-Francis's or Junior Rioli's.
Yeah, I think that's a great observation. We'll look into some individual players, and for this one, we'll look at the players ready to take the next step players who we think might show some really good signs of improvement or just shine on a level that we didn't expect. And I am the first name I've got is Connor Rosie. This is sort of, how do I put this? It's sort of looking at his change mid-season last year, sort of after the bye rounds. He really came into his own in the midfield. He copped a few knocks and he was still playing through it, and he was clearly their best player, I thought, come the end of the year. And I just think the sky's the limit for Connor Rosie. He's a ball winner. He's a game winner. I think if he's let loose around stoppages, you know, from round one, and he's got a bit of protection from the players around him, especially like someone like Jason Horne-Francis could really complement him in that midfield with being a bigger body, a bit more of a quote-unquote impactful player, I guess. But I think Rosie's just, he's going to keep improving. And out of him and Butters and all the other young guys on that list, Rosie, in my opinion, is just head and shoulders above the rest. The only other player I've sort of made of note here is, and this is in relation to a bit of an opening with Amon leaving. I have got Kane Farrell as a player who could take the next step. Right now, he's probably the number one wingman in the club. There's probably a few other guys that could make a case, maybe a Miles Bergman or some others.
Xavier Dersma,
of course. Gee, that's bad that I forgot about him. But I think Farrell really has come into his own in the last couple of seasons. He's got an unreal kick on him. And I could just see him sort of relishing with the opportunity of potentially having a bit more of the footy, because I really do think he's a fantastic outside player. What are your thoughts?
I think two good players to obviously take the next step. Connor Rosie, incredible finish to last season, given he had all Australian honours and won the club best and fairest. But it'll be a scary thought to see him full time in the midfield, because he's arguably one of the players who can actually win a Brownlow if he plays full time midfield, which is scary. And it felt like about time that Ken Hinckley and the coaching group at Port Adelaide moved Rosie into the midfield with more minutes instead of the forward that we saw him in his early years. And, you know, I think he kicked 5 goals against Brisbane on debut at the Gabba or thereabouts. So he's a handy forward player, but I think, yeah, I think midfield's probably the best spot for Rosie. In terms of Kane Farrell, I think he's got a great opportunity with the absence of Carl Amon, just to lock down a permanent spot in the Port Adelaide's best 22. I will put Miles Bergman as another player that could potentially take the next step. I know with Miles Bergman being in my keeper league team, I've been following news quite often. And last year, one of the assistant coaches gave him a real clip around the byes that he hasn't been training well or performing as expected. And I think over the preseason, he's really stuck his head down and really trained the house down, as every player seems to do this off-season before the footy starts. But I think Miles Bergman is really going to try and take maybe Carl Amon's spot and maybe fight with Kane Farrell for that midfield position.
Yeah, it's interesting. And when we talk about players ready to take the next step, I also think as well, if Port are to push and become a really big contender this season, which a lot of people think they might, I think it could come down to guys like, and I know he had a good year last year, but again, might need some more improvement out of a Todd Marshall, definitely out of a Mitch Georgiades, some of these guys who can, you know, be the goal kickers in that team, because realistically, I don't know if they really have a great set of goal kickers in that team. Like, they've got the targets, they've shown in glimpses that they could all be really big players for the future, but the consistency just hasn't been there from really any of them. And if Charlie Dixon is going to be injured, which he often is at stages throughout a season, well, that's going to be a big factor for Port. So hopefully we can see one of those two players improve and, you know, take the next step. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, sort of mentioning Charlie Dixon and how important he is to Port Adelaide and their setup. I think the one worry that I have for Port Adelaide coming into 2023 is their reliance on Dixon. And given his age and injury history, if Dixon misses large chunks or key matches against bottom eight or top eight teams and they go to lose that at a home, I think that might really impact them on their run home to the finals, because at this stage, Todd Marshall and Mitch Georgiadis are still finding their feet. I mean, Todd Marshall had a breakout year with the amount of goals and games he played, but I think they're still... I think that their vulnerability is with Charlie Dixon, because they don't have anyone who can come in from the reserves to take that spot. And there's still that question mark of who's the second ruckman as well.
Absolutely. We'll look at a few players that I have penned as being a little bit under pressure. And I've got two. One I'll very, very quickly mention, and that's Jason Horne-Francis. Again, it's not really as much... It's mainly just due to the fact that he has just gone to Port Adelaide after 1 year at North, being the number one draft pick. They gave up a lot in that trade. Naturally, pressure will come. If he has a bad start to his career at Port Adelaide, the media will come after him, and questions will be asked of his, I guess, his toughness, and not only just physical but mental toughness, because the pressure will be pounding him down if he can't get it right. So that's one. The second player, and this is a player who got a little bit found out last year, and I think his down year was a bit of a reflection of Port's year as a whole, and that was Alir Alia. You know, he came in that first season, he got to Port Adelaide, and I think he was an All-Australian come season's end, and he was what most people would have said a very dominant intercepting defender for what was a very good Port Adelaide team. And then last season, he really just got found out. Teams realised how to play against him. You know, they kept a man on him at all times, didn't allow him to be that third man up, and I think Aaliyah really struggled with that. And so I'd say this year, if he can get things right, things will go very well for Port Adelaide. If he doesn't get it right, well, they might look at other options and be like, well, what else can we do to get the most out of the player in that position? Because he clearly struggles when he's got really close contacts from the opposition.
Yeah, I think good observation with commenting that Elie Alia had a down season. I think that's also a reflection of Port Adelaide's defensive six or seven, if you include the player coming off the bench. They're not flush with key defenders. And Tom Jonas, their captain, does play above his height. He's only high 185 centimetres, so he's playing above his height, whereas you do want Alir Alia to be that third man up because he's such a good intercept marker. And I think teams, when they played Port Adelaide, they had two big talls and they isolated Alir Alia against, you know, if Port Adelaide was playing Geelong, they had Tom Hawkins and Jeremy Cameron and forced Alir Alia to play closer to one of those two in a more defensive mindset rather than attacking. So it'd be interesting to see how Ken Hinckley can rearrange the board magnets to allow Alir Alia to be a bit more free, more like that Tom Stewart role where Tom Stewart obviously commands the back line in Geelong. And Jason Horne-Francis, it's always has a lot of controversies when a first round draft pick leaves a club, and the number one draft pick leaving a club after 1 year is always has a lot of headlines. I think the pressure from Jason Horne-Francis is probably the Port Adelaide fans. I think unfortunately, they might come after him. I know Bulldogs, when they brought over Tom Boyd, a former number one pick after 1 year at GWS, they weren't at all impressed with his first season at the Dogs. And that might also come for Jason Horne-Francis. I think hearing the reports from the intra-club match that Port Adelaide had, he had a really disappointing turn-up. And in fact, Kane Corns' brother, Chad Corns, is an assistant there and said he wasn't impressed with anyone, really. So it's going to be interesting to see the effect that has now that Port Adelaide's playing a team this weekend. I think it's West Coast, in West Coast, I believe. So hopefully Jason Horton Francis can find his feet and perform at what we all expect and saw of him in his under 18 year. But yeah, I think also you could probably put maybe Port Adelaide under the pressure as well, and particularly Ken Hinckley, just because he's been at the club for so long. There is that expectation for success, given they've lost two home prelims in 2020 and 2021. 2022 was obviously disappointing, but 2023 might be even harder for Ken Hinckley and Port Adelaide. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, you know what? The worrying thing for Port Adelaide right now is, after this conversation, I'm just sort of thinking, I don't see how they really contend. And I haven't been on as high on them as others have, and I know you certainly haven't either. So maybe we're just a little bit pessimistic on them, which could be very well the case. I'll happily be proven wrong if that's the case. But yeah, like, the more we talk about them, the more I'm just not convinced they're ready to be, you know, this top four potential team.
Yeah, I think there's a commentator out there that's a mad Port Adelaide fan. And for those in the know and footy fanatics like us, you might know who that person is, who every season beats up Port Adelaide and they seem to fizzle out for one reason or another. And I feel like that's happening this year. I think, I don't see the promised land that is being sold to us by some media experts or outlets. But look, Port Adelaide have some players that can help push them towards a flag. I just don't know if they have 22 players in the team that can do it.
I tend to agree. I think that'll do for Port Adelaide. We'll move on to our second and final team of this episode, and that will be Richmond. Obviously a very dominant team over the past sort of 5-10 years. Dieter, you can take the lead on this one.
Yeah, thank you for that. Richmond's sort of off-season was a turnover of, I guess you could say, depth players. They sort of delisted Jack Arts, Riley Collier-Dawkins, Will Martin, Matthew Parker, and Sydney Stack. A few of those players are playing 15 to 20 games or roughly a season in the past 2021 and 22 seasons. And Josh Caddy also retired. So that's a big hit for their depth, which will be interesting to see how they replace that with younger people they've picked up in the draft. But in terms of their ins, hard to go past the two midfield bulls that are Jacob Hopper and Tim Taranto that they got from GWS. Incredible to get both. They did sell a bit of the farm to grab those two. I think they had to trade three first round picks and one or two second round picks for them. So that obviously costs a lot, but I think it's obvious to say that Richmond are going for one more flag while they have some of their older brigade in your Rewalts and your Martins and your Cochins still about, and you can't really argue with them. They've got all the currency that the fans need in terms of having won three flags previously, and I don't think the Richmond fans can begrudge them trying to go for one more. I think they're such an experienced and well-drilled team. The additions of Hopper and Taranto are incredible gets just to help out in the midfield that Ward's lacking a bit of that contested ball-winning abilities. What are your thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, I think the ins and outs are really exciting for Richmond fans. I know they probably don't get as excited as other fans these days about a flag, but it must be nice being in that position. But I think... yeah, they're definitely going one more push while they've got some of these older guys still around. I can't imagine after this season, though, there's really going to be much hope. So it really is all or nothing. And they have given up a lot of depth, as you said. With an aging list and some players who are going to be a little bit more injury prone as they get towards the end, that could come back to bite them potentially. But that being said, I mean, in my opinion, their weakest line on the field was their midfield, and they've probably gone and turned it into one of their strongest, probably their strongest, adding in two very high quality players in Hopper and Taranto. Doing that, you allow a guy like Dusty, who hasn't been 100%, who he's kind of like a new recruit this year if he can get his body right, because he really wasn't doing a whole lot last season. You can let him park himself in the forward pocket and just be an absolute pest for opposition defenses. And, you know, if he's playing full-time forward, you can probably pen him down for minimum 2 goals a game. You know, he's going to be a massive threat at forward stoppages. And then you've got Hopper and Taranto just working through the midfield with guys like Cochin, who realistically this could be his last season maybe. It's a weird dynamic. It's exciting. I like the moves.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how they go in gunning for one more flag. I think having to think about Richmond, I think their danger, and this might not be the segment to put it in, but I think their forward line, and in terms of their key forwards, Jack Riewoldt, 33, 34, however old he is, and Tom Lynch, now that he's crossed from Gold Coast, that was 4 years ago, and he's now turning 30 this year, I believe, and they don't have Marby or Chole, they don't have Callum Coleman-Jones, that were their replacements a few years ago before they walked, I think, last off-season. So I think if they get hit with some injuries or restings here and there from Riewoldt, I don't actually know who replaces them. And I'm not calling Ivan Soldo a forward in any stretch of the imagination, even though he is very tall. But my prediction for Richmond is that they do maintain their spot inside the top eight, whether that's as high as fifth or as low as eighth. I think you can't discount teams that have been deep into finals and have won flags. You never want to play them throughout the regular season, let alone in the finals series. And if Richmond do make it to the finals, and we do predict it, they do, I don't think any team wants to play them, because they'll be the dark horse to really push any team, really. But in terms of their aim for 2023, if they can somehow manage to nab a top four spot, I think that'll set them up really well. Just having that second life, if you will, if they do lose in the first week, they have a home game at the MCG, and we all know how reliable they are at the MCG, especially during finals. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, interesting. It's a tough one, because I've said it over and over again. There's 10 teams, I think, that are contending. Pretty much every team is getting better. Richmond definitely have improved, I think, on paper in terms of their best 22. But I think they just need a lot of luck to go their way this season. And I'm glad you mentioned the forward line. I was actually talking about it the other day with someone else who's a mad Richmond fan. And he said to me, he's like, if Tom Lynch gets injured, that's warning signs for the Tigers, because, as you said, no real replacement. You know, is Noah Bolter that replacement to go for? And if so, that's a big wild card. You don't know. So, I mean, this is the broadest range I have for sort of a prediction. But I think anywhere from, as you said, fifth, if it all goes right, to even 10th, I could see them being that 10th team. And just because I think it could all unravel quite quickly for them if it doesn't go right. I will say, though, you mentioned it, they are probably the last team I'd be wanting to play in September. So if they get into the top eight, they are automatically a chance for the flag. That's the opinion I have of Richmond. I have the same opinion of Geelong. Those are just the two teams you cannot rule out winning a flag if they make the eight.
Yeah, I think they're similar to Hawthorn back when they won their three-peat. Didn't matter where they finished on the ladder, you just did not want to play them in the finals, given their personnel that they had and the sort of the battle-hardened veterans in their team. Moving on, players that I think that will take the next step. I've got a few names there, and we can sort of discuss them each as they go. I was really impressed with Hugo Rolfsmith last season. I thought he showed incredible dash off the halfback/wing role, and I think he sort of replaced Basha Hooley after he retired, and I think he's got huge scope to really improve from there. Morris Rioli, like I said with Port Adelaide, when you've got a Rioli in your side, and especially inside forward 50, you're looking good, and to have Morris Rioli running around snagging goals, or his rundown pressure is elite, and he's one of my favourites, and I think he could go to the next level after another pre-season and continuity in his game. Noah Bolter, you know, given he's been thrown around in the forward line and defensive line, he might sort of stick to centre half back as we are predicting. I think he's an exceptional athlete and just so powerful and mobile. I think he could be one that makes the All Australian team, whether it's this year or in the future. I've got high praise for him. Some people might not have that, but moving on, I think also Noah Cumberland as well really showed incredible, I think, wisdom and experience for someone who hadn't played a lot. I think he debuted last year, and he was just really smart around goal. And I think he was a Brisbane Academy player that Richmond sort of stole from them, and I was really impressed with Cumberland outside of the game against, I think it was Fremantle, where he didn't kick the ball and it took longer than... He played on and the siren, final siren went. I think Noah Cumberland, with having tasted AFL experience in 2022, I think he's going to really help Richmond in the forward line and be a new avenue to goal. What are your thoughts on those four or five players?
Yeah, so I'll go through one at a time. Ralph Smith, I think, yeah, I like Ralph Smith. If he can really cement down that spot on the half-back line, he's just another handy half-back rebounding player that Richmond have always seemed to got a fair few of. So I like him as a player. Morris Rioli, goal sneak. I think he does need to do a little bit more this season. I think he went missing a lot in games last year. Big reason is just due to being a, you know, he was first year player last year, was he, or second year? Second year player, yes. So you know, very young still. I think, yeah, the only way is up for him. You're definitely a bit higher on Noah Bolter than I am. We've mentioned the Supercoach draft, and I've had Noah Bolter since day one, and I mean, so as a result, I do watch him a bit more closely, and oh, he's frustrating to watch. And I think Richmond fans can probably agree that he's got all the potential. There's no doubt about that. But oh, he has some brain fades and he does some weird things. Mm-hmm. He loves to have a bit of a sook on the field, which, you know, means he's passionate about the game, and that's a good thing. But yeah, I don't know if I see him being an All-Australian anytime soon or any of that. But I hope he does do well, because it means it's more Supercoach points for me, so I'll take it. And then, yeah, Cumberland, I'm glad you mentioned Cumberland. He was sort of my one that I had in mind. I think like you said, he adds a new avenue to goal. I thought last year he was phenomenal when he came in. Really was an unknown prospect when he started playing. Came in just due to a range of injuries, and then never fell back out of the side. He was just too good to drop. So, yeah, big positive for Richmond, I think, Cumberland. He could maybe be that player who steps up if a Lynch gets injured for a few weeks.
Yeah, I think Noah Cumberland, I don't have the stats in front of me, but he was averaging over 2 goals a game, which is impressive for a player in his debut season. I mean, he might have only played 4 to 8 games, but I think that just shows how high his ability is. And he's got a great contested mark, as well as he can smoke the ball outside 50. So I think that always helps Richmond going kicking the ball into their forward line. Moving on to players under pressure, I've got three midfielders. There might be some more players that I think under pressure, but I think Trent Cotchin probably unfairly picked in this position, but I think his impact in games has dropped significantly, and injuries, and especially soft tissue injuries, are not helping that. Whether that's being able to run out games or impact in the midfield in terms of that burst of speed away from stoppages, I think he's just really getting impacted by his lack of, maybe you could call it, mobility. And to be honest, I don't know if Cotchin is a walk-up start to Richmond, and it's going to be an awkward conversation or scenario if Dimmer Hardwick comes to Cotchin and say, we might need to put you in the VFL. You have some comments?
Yeah, I'm glad you said this, because I've been thinking about this. And Cotchin obviously is a superstar, you know, Brownlow medalist. He's been an absolute champion for Richmond. But there are four guys who, in my eyes, are just clearly ahead of Cotchin in that midfield. Obviously, Hopper and Taranto have just come in. Jaden Short's now, I think, a full-time mid. I think it's safe to say that. I think he's better than Cotchin nowadays. And Dion Prestia, who I have a feeling you're going to mention him soon, but I think Dion Prestia is ahead of him. And that's just four guys I think that are clearly better. You throw in
Dustin Martin,
who
Shai Bolton.
I was going to say those two. Yeah. These are guys who, yes, they can play forward, and they probably might play a bit more forward than midfield. But I still have those two ahead of Trent Cotchin in as midfielders too. So, yeah, Cotchin's definitely under pressure. I think if everything goes right for them and they push for a flag, there's a chance he's not in that grand final team if players step up. And there's still some young kids there that could get spots. You've got Camden McIntosh and Marlon Pickett on the wings. They're not moving anytime soon. You know. And then there's Jack Ross, Thompson Dow, a few other guys that you could name. So, I mean, I do have Cotchin above those two. But, yeah, the spots aren't just unlimited in that midfield, so that's a great player to bring up.
Yeah, I think if Richmond are truly going for a flag, Dimmer is going to be as cutthroat as anyone, and you know, you can't really gift games to club champions anymore. You look at what happened to Melbourne, where they had to leave Jones out of the grand final team, like 300 game player, former captain, best and fairest. I think he might have been maybe an All-Australian one year. I'm not sure. But Melbourne were cutthroat and didn't have him in their finals teams. That might happen to Richmond, unfortunately, if Cotchin's injury or form is underperforming, or the young kids are performing, or the new recruits even. A few other players that I have under the pressure along with Cotchin is Thompson Dow. He was a late first round pick a few years ago, and it might have been after the 2018 final series, where he sort of slid to pick 18 or 19. I think he's really, like Riley Collier-Dawkins, might have been a speculative pick at that spot and isn't performing or showing that continuity that Richmond would have been expecting for an inside midfielder. So we're hoping that Thompson Dow can get a few more minutes in the midfield and also get some game time, really, because unfortunately we've seen first-round draft picks being delisted after 3 or 4 years if they're not cutting it. And then Dion Prestia is under pressure, not in terms of his form, but he cannot take a beat. He's always getting injured, and that might be the football gods saying it's time to go, really. I think whether it's a hamstring issue or a calf issue, his body's just breaking down before our eyes. And he could be also someone like Cotchin, where if he's just not performing, Dimmer Hardwick might knock on his door and say, we're not able to play you above X, Y, Z player who are being able to stay on the park and performing. So It'll be an interesting watch for the Richmond's two veteran players in Cochin and Prestia this coming season, and they might have the luxury of resting them, as they have said they might follow Geelong's blueprint of resting Dangerfield and Selwood throughout the year. I don't mind that, but if Cochin and Prestia are injured for large parts, I don't imagine they'll get back in the team.
Very, very interesting analysis. I don't really have much more to add to that. I think, yeah, Cochin was the one in my eyes. And I guess you could also then throw in Tom Lynch being under pressure purely as well from an injury standpoint. We mentioned the hole that forward line develops when he's not in that team, especially just given they've got real no forward depth or key forward depth at all. So, yeah, really interesting. They're an interesting team to watch. I just can't figure out how it's going to go for them. They're a true wild card. With the Tigers, though, if I'm not sure, I just usually assume they're going to do all right. That's my sort of theory I've learned over the years. I've got a lot of friends who are Tigers fans, and it breaks me to say that they'll do all right, but I can imagine them getting into my ears one more time this season. Do you have any final comments you want to make?
Just trying to think. I think you just can't discount Richmond at any part of the season or in any games, really. They're like fortunate to be playing at the MCG, which is their happy hunting ground the last 5 or so years, and you really don't want to play Richmond in Richmond at the MCG. I'm not sure what their fixture looks like, but if they drop a few interstate games, they might be in a bit of trouble come season's end. But I think Richmond will be around the top eight at somewhere in there.
All right, well, there you have it. We've done the power, we've done the yellow and black. It's two teams who definitely could be seeing some September football, maybe the last weekend for one of them. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see how it unfolds. If you enjoyed the episode or you have opinions on what we've said, please let us know. We'll leave our link to our Twitter in the description of this episode. Please send in any questions or feedback. We love hearing it. We love hearing different opinions. We absolutely love it. We don't get too defensive. We just like hearing other people's thoughts, and that's part of the fun of this podcast for sure. Hopefully you enjoyed. We'll be back next with our next two teams in the next episode, which will come out not too long from now. But until then, thank you and see you next time.
See you next time.